Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Community Radio Show here on 3RPP, the voice of the peninsula. My name's Jonah Vella, and I've got my co-host, Steve Pallas, here with me. We'll be talking all things grassroots sports today. We've got a special guest coming onto the show, but for now, I'd like to introduce to you my esteemed co-host, Steve Pallas. How are you this morning, mate?
Joe, I'm very, very well, bright and early on a Saturday morning.
That's good, and best wishes to all those people that have been fighting the fires this past week. On behalf of the sports community, we hope that you got through it okay and that there's not too much damage and you can get on with your lives a bit, and maybe there's been a little bit of respite for you with this colder weather. But our thoughts do go out to those people, don't they, Steve?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, Joe. And it's amazing how much the fires affect not just people but livestock and the communities and including their sports clubs.
Absolutely. Now, we're going to be talking about annual general meetings today, mate. It's one of those topics that clubs tend to avoid. It goes in that either that too hard basket or that too boring basket, one of those two. And it is actually probably the most important get-together that a club has for the year. So we've put together some information on how to run an effective AGM, which you can access at our website, www.sportscommunity.com.au. But we'll spend some time going through that now. Now, off the top of your head, mate, what's one of the factors that the sports clubs out there need to keep in mind when running their AGMs?
Joe, look, it might seem strange to the summer clubs that we start to talk about AGMs in February because they've just got over the halfway mark of the season and many, many clubs are looking to finish their seasons off strongly, whether it be in finals or major competitions and that sort of thing. And that's where all the focus is. And it's not until right at the end that clubs start to end of the season where clubs start to think about the AGM. And there's actually a whole lot of things that clubs need to prepare for an AGM that really cause clubs and volunteers a lot of stress if they haven't done any work leading up to it. So I guess that's what we wanted to talk about today is just preparing clubs, taking a little bit of time for clubs just to get ready for that inevitable rush at the end of the season. So I guess the first thing, Joe, it sounds logical, is schedule a date and schedule a location, because it is really important that as many members of the club come to the AGM as possible. So get save the date out there to your members.
And that should be done at this point in time?
Oh, look, ideally in a perfect world, clubs would do that at the start of the season so that every single member knows as early as possible when an AGM is, because it's really important for the members to become part of the club.
And well, then that's going to be one of the cardinal mistakes that clubs make out there. And that's talking about my club as well, of whom I'm a member of. We tend to not get our act together in terms of AGMs until the middle of the year, which is, I think, probably typical. I don't know what the folks out there think. Welcome to drop us a line at our email, which I'll give to you in a minute.
Which is join the show.
Join the show at sportscommunity.com.au. Thanks. Thanks, Steve. We'd love to have your feedback on this. But for our particular club, it's around that June-July period. I imagine that's similar for a lot of the clubs out there. And you're right, that's probably way too late.
Oh, well, it's not too late. But what it does do is it causes a lot of stress and it causes a lot of work and it causes a lot of anxiety and that sort of thing. Because clubs are running week to week, just getting the competitions on the ground and the field and the pool and the court. And I guess what we encourage clubs to do now, certainly the summer sports clubs, just take a little bit of a breath and just take a little minute at your next committee meeting just to think about your AGM, because it'll save you a lot of time moving on, because there's a lot of formal requirements that the club needs to report.
I guess that's the next step. So we got our venue, we've scheduled it early. The other thing that clubs tend to trample over themselves to try and get done in a rush is the financial reports, and there's quite a number of them that need to to get done. So those should be, we should be starting to think about those earlier on in the season.
Well, absolutely, Joe. And those clubs that are managing their financial or doing their financial reporting on a monthly basis to the committees and putting all the transactions into their accounting system, whatever they're using, those clubs are absolutely doing the right thing. And when I say doing the right thing, I mean going to save themselves time and stress at the end of the season. But those clubs that really don't have their accounting transactions and all their accounting records in place really need to start working on that now, because it's one of the requirements under the legislation that the committees report true and fair and accurate financial statements to their members. And often that takes time. And depending on the amount of how big your club is, many, many clubs are actually going to require their financial statements to be audited. So that means that the auditor needs time to actually receive the statements and conduct the audit. So financial statements and that reporting requirement can't just be rushed through overnight. So that's one of the common areas where clubs really cause themselves a little bit of stress and anxiety, because they've left the reporting too late.
The other thing that we have identified as something that clubs should really take into consideration when running AGMs or planning for AGMs is understanding their club rules. Now, what do we mean by that, mate?
Well, every single club has a set of club rules, in different states and territories around the country, they're called different things. It could be called the club constitution or the club rules. And the club rules define how the club must operate. And one of the key things about that is that it defines how meetings will operate, and in particular AGMs will operate, or annual general meetings. So clubs may have, not every club is the same. And so clubs need or certainly presidents need to look at their club rules and just make sure that they're abiding by the rules. And the things that, again, the presidents need to look at is how much notice they need to give of the AGM, and about what information needs to be supplied to members and when, if they would like members to vote on resolutions and special resolutions and changing the club name or the purpose of the club or the club rules or other major issues that the club may wish to vote on and take to the members. And there's also some things that members are going to be asked to vote on require special resolutions, and that requires 75% of the members to vote with it, vote for the resolution for it to pass. And special resolutions have their own requirements about providing information to the members, often, depending on whereabouts in Australia you live, often up to 21 days before the meeting, and a lot of information surrounding it. So again, making sure that you understand what information needs to go out and the logistics around the meeting is a very, very important thing.
Another one that takes up a bit of time that probably needs a bit of forward thinking is the President's Report. Now, the President's Report needs to be provided to the Secretary, and there's also the Treasurer's Report, and any of the other reports that they need to be provided to members well before the AGM. So there is quite a lot of reporting that needs to be done, and I think that's one of the things that clubs really underestimate is to try and give your club secretary enough time to prepare the reports for members and send it to members prior to the AGM. If that's what's required in the club rules.
Yeah.
And I don't think enough clubs do that. No, I know we don't.
No, absolutely. And even to the point of deciding what information you're going to report onto your club rules. Like, often there's as you mentioned, the President's Report and the Treasurer's Report, but often there's a Coach's Report and a Social Committee Report and a Fundraising Report and a Facilities Management Report. Clubs would like to provide lots of information to their members about what they've done through the year. And each of those reports needs to be written by a different person. And each of that takes time. That takes time for the people to do it. And every secretary that we speak to gets so frustrated because they can't get their reports in from the people that are writing them. So the first tip there, or one of the important tips there, is if you're going to want some information from someone, whether it's a coach or team manager, let them know early. Don't just put it onto them at the last minute, because they may not have time to do it. So let them know early. Let them know when you need it by and what you need included. And then that, again, that takes a lot of anxiety and pressure and stress off the volunteer that's providing that report. And it makes it a lot easier for the secretary and just a lot more fun and enjoyable process.
The other one, one of the other main ones, tips for, we're talking tips for AGMs here, is probably the one that I think really differentiates the successful clubs from those that struggle a bit, and that's succession planning. And, you know, that might sound like a boring phrase, but it really is a key element of a successful club. And what succession planning is all about is not waiting until the AGM to work out who your committee is going to be, who your key roles are going to be filled by, but actually actively looking for people to fill those roles throughout the course of the season, especially early on in the season. And what you'll find when you go out there in clubland is you'll find that the really successful clubs, the club president, the club vice president, secretary, are all out there on game day talking to the members of the clubs, always thinking about the future. You know, you'll hear them often asking people, how can you commit? Are you interested in a role on the committee? So all of this work is happening way before the AGM. And I guess that's the point that we're trying to get through to people here, is that proactive planning.
Oh, absolutely, Joe. And in the training sessions, which we have the honour and privilege of running all around the country, one of the things that we say to presidents is, well, two things. The best recruit you're ever going to make within your club is the next president. And to all, pretty much for every single role for new committees, the first day on the job in a new committee should be looking at targeting and developing and enhancing the skills and the attractiveness of the role to the next volunteer. From day one, you should be thinking of, a club should be thinking about succession planning, because now there's so much information that volunteers need, particularly for those key roles. So some clubs are putting in formal structures. So traditionally there's been presidents, vice presidents. Traditionally the vice president will succeed into the role of president. But now clubs are moving to have a secretary and an assistant secretary, where the assistant secretary is learning what the tasks that the secretary does. And the same with the treasurer. And that's, we're picking that up from the sports, because often sports have coaches and assistant coaches, and assistant coaches grow into the coaching role. So we're learning from the sports. So really thinking about day one about who's going to fill your roles within your club for the next committee and the next year and that sort of thing is really, really important. And I guess if you don't do that, the downside is we get to the committee meeting and we say, rightio, all positions are vacant. Who would like to be president? And no one puts their hand up. And all of a sudden the club goes from very prosperous and successful to on the brink of extinction, just in that one second.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So that succession planning is really, really, really important. And Joe, I'll just mention that one of the reasons that clubs traditionally don't do succession planning is because traditionally it's been up to the members to decide who the next president is and the next secretary and the next committee meeting. The members vote on that each year. And many presidents that we talk to say, well, I don't really have the right to anoint the next successor or the next president or that sort of thing. And look, theoretically that is true, but I'd probably know of only one AGM in the last 12 to 18 months where there's actually been a vote, and very rarely are all the positions filled at the AGM. So then clubs are going out and finding their committee members and their key volunteers and their office holders after the meeting. So really, yep, theoretically the members vote on who it is, but really in this day and age now, what we are seeing is with the successfully run clubs, is that they're really developing a culture of volunteering within their club and a clear succession plan or clear pathway through it. And so by the time that the the volunteer gets to those senior positions or office bearing roles, they've had a really good training, like, you know, training sessions really, or training development and personal development, which is really one of the key things that we're seeing separate successful clubs and really strong positive clubs and those that are continually struggling, is that they kind of live from day to day, week to week, committee by committee, that sort of thing. Joe,
you're with Joe Novella and Steve Pallas from sportscommunity.com.au on the Sports Community Radio Show. We're talking annual general meetings today, and we're giving you the top 9 tips for running an AGM. We hope you're enjoying the show. You can join us in our conversation or give us some feedback on join the show at sportscommunity.com.au. Now, Steve, the next tip that we have is one that probably not many of the people out there would think of, in that the AGM can be a significant marketing tool for your club as well. Now, what we mean by that is the AGM, in essence, is a meeting. So it's an opportunity to get people along to your club, whether they be members or sponsors or other stakeholders, and tell them about what's going on at your club. And I don't think enough clubs out there understand the power of that. The fact that the notice of meeting, which you need to send out to your members in accordance with club rules, can also be sent out to all these other folks to get them along to the meeting. And that gives you, or gives the club, a captive audience.
Oh, absolutely, Joe. It's a fantastic way to promote the club to new people and sponsors and the community, and to really embrace the community and get introduce them to not just the club, but the people within your club. Often people are hesitant to go to club AGMs because there's been no succession planning. So the age-old fear of volunteers, if I go to the AGM, I know I'm going to end up on the committee. So we need to move past that, and we need to have almost turned an AGM into, yes, there's a formal gathering, but yeah, it's a really important social event as well, not just for the current day players, but past players and past people that have been involved in the club. It's a great way to bring them back to the club in a social environment, which doesn't necessarily need to be at the club rooms, Joe. It can be in a sponsor's venue. I know of, for instance, the Mount Martha Cricket Club a couple of years ago ran their AGM in the Mornington Brewery as a way of promoting the sponsor and attracting some of the younger members to become involved in the more formal running of the club. So there's lots of different ways. You don't just need to look at it just a meeting in the club rooms like we traditionally look at.
It's a great validation tool too. If you invite your local councillor, your local councillors and state politicians, maybe a federal member, to come along to the AGM and have a look at the way that you're running your club, then you're going a long way to ensuring that you're going to get business from these people in the future, or you can partner with them in the future. So it's important from that perspective as well.
Oh, that's right, and it's a fantastic way to build relationships with your local government, federal and state and territory governments, and you can have those guests as keynote speakers. Like, you don't have to just stick to the rigid formality of the business of the club. You can have a keynote speaker. I know of clubs that have had a comedian. So there's lots of different things to make your AGM successful and not a burden and not a chore and valuable to your club. But I guess the one tip, Joe, that we're trying to get across, that do it early, give yourself a couple of months, let people know exactly what they need, and it'll be a smooth process. If not, stress, anxiety, pressure, and it all rushed.
Now, you're with Joe Novella and Steve Pallas on Sports Community Radio, www.sportscommunity.com.au. Feedback at join the show at sportscommunity.com.au. Just to recap, we're talking annual general meetings, and we're giving our listeners 9 tips on how to run a successful one. And the first one we have said is schedule early. The second is arrange a venue early. The third is to prepare your financial statements early. The fourth is to understand the club rules. The fifth is the president's report to the members, and making sure that's done early enough so the secretary has enough time to plan that out. Succession planning is number 6, and the importance of making sure you're looking at the next club president, the next club secretary, the next committee. And number 7 is the notice of meeting, making sure that you involve your whole community in your AGM and not just your members. Now, if you're busy out there trying to write these down, don't worry. We have a podcast which is available on our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au. You'll be able to listen to the show in full and hear all of these suggestions again. The podcasts have been great. So far, the feedback's been fantastic. We've had listeners from all over the world, including places like the US. And we've had many, many, many listens. So do yourselves a favour. If you want to hear this again, just go to our website and have a listen to the podcast. Now, up to number 8, Steve, and that's special resolutions. What are we telling our listeners about special resolutions?
Yeah, as I said earlier, Joe, if you're going to make a major change to your club, i.e. the rules, to the purpose of the club, or to the name of the club, generally your club rules will require that means a vote, which we call a special resolution. And that's different to a normal vote, where the normal vote is passed when there's a 50% majority or greater than 50% majority. But with these key items, special resolutions require a 75% majority. And they also require that the members are notified the fact that there is a special resolution. They're notified of what the resolution is and what the purpose of the resolution is for the club and why the committee wants it. So there's a lot of information that needs to go around there. So make sure that you understand that. And the last one, Joe, is it sounds simple, but
it's the key one, I reckon. It's to get there early and set up the room.
Well, especially if you're having your AGM in a brewery, Joe. get there as early as you need to. But it's quite...
And I'm sure that there's a lot of people out there involved in sports clubs that would know this particular type of member, and that's the get there early member. There's always a number of them in every sports club. Whether it be a trivia night that you're hosting, whatever it is that you're hosting, they are there 15 minutes before doors open.
15 minutes before. They're there 45 minutes before. They're sitting. Often they're sitting in the car park, Joe, waiting for you to open, turn the urn on and have some free cheese and crackers or whatever it is that you're...
putting on.
You're putting on. So get there early. Give yourself a lot of time. Prepare and just... Enjoy the night.
All right, we hope you've enjoyed our segment on AGMs and the top 9 tips for running an AGM. As mentioned before, you can listen to the podcast again on our website, www.sportscommunity.com.au. We'll take an opportunity now to feature some station sponsors here on 3RPP FM, the voice of the peninsula. And when we come back, we'll be with our special guest, Anthony Grimmer, who is the general manager of sponsorship and commercial business at Football Federation of Victoria. So stay tuned to your dial on 3RPP FM.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Sorensen here to talk about your skin. It's the largest organ in the body and often the least cared for. With skin being such an important part of your body, why trust it with anyone else but an experienced, university-educated dermal clinician? Like the team at Dermal Aesthetics Specialist Skin and Laser Clinic. With highly educated clinicians, the latest treatments and products, they do things differently at Dermal Aesthetics, and it shows. Visit dalaserclinic.com.au. That's dalaserclinic.com.au.
The the all-new Atrium Restaurant. Not only has new owners, it also boasts many new facilities with something for all the family. There's the stunning Atrium Restaurant, a massive kids' play area, a burger sports bar with Foxtel, and free function room hire.
Try one of their weekly specials, like Thursday's Mega Parma Night, $12.99, Wednesday's Steak Night, $19.99, or Monday's Kids Eat Free Night.
The new Atrium Restaurant, 10 Country Club Drive, Safety Beach. Bookings call 59818123. A station sponsor.
More and more people with a taste for quality are shopping at Eliza Meats. Kevin and his lean team pride themselves on the finest cuts. From juicy steaks and roasts to high-grade mince and sausages. And Eliza Meats are the gourmet specialists. Inquire about Eliza Meats Spit Hire. Phone 9787 4473 for a mouth-watering meal fit for a king. It's all at Eliza Meats. See our sponsor Kevin at Eliza Meats, 112B Mount Eliza Way, a station sponsor.
Are you a business owner looking to cut costs in your business? Tough, isn't it? Let Bartercard show you a different way to increase your sales, cash flow, and business profits. Don't wait. Increase your cash flow today. Boost your business with Bartercard. To find out how Bartercard can increase cash flow to your business, call 1300-BARTER. That's 1300-BARTER.
If you live in Rye, Blairgowrie, Portsea, St Andrews Beach or Sorrento, contact South East Water today about connecting early to the new sewerage system. With Peninsula Eco Early Connection option, you could pay to connect to the new sewerage system up to 16 years ahead of schedule. For more information on early connection, contact our team today. Phone 1800 720 613 or visit the South East Water website. Peninsula Eco. Connect early.
Hi, I'm Sally from Sweet Pea Cuisine. At Sweet Pea Cuisine, we specialise in sharing enjoyment, passion and knowledge in relation to food. We offer cooking classes for children, teens and adults, recipe creation to highlight your product, events and media presentations and cooking demonstrations. You can also hear me every Tuesday morning on Brekkie with Jono and Marzi with my weekly recipe and cooking tips. If you'd like to find out more, join me to share my love of food at www.sweetpeacuisine.com.au or on my Facebook page, Sweet Pea Cuisine. Stay sweet, a station sponsor.
Welcome back to 3RPP, the voice of the peninsula, with your hosts, Jonah Vella and Steve Pallas. We've got a very special guest with us today. His name is Anthony Grimmer. He's from the Football Federation of Victoria. Anthony started out in the high performance area of the FFV. He graduated onto sponsorships and partnerships, and now he's the general manager for commercial marketing and communication. So a big welcome to you, Mr. Anthony Grimmer.
Thank you very much, guys. Great to be here.
G'day, Anthony. Steve Pallas, how are you going?
Hello, Steve. How are you?
I'm very well. And first of all, congratulations on the new addition to your family.
Oh, thank you very much.
Getting no sleep, no doubt?
No, it's been okay. This is the second one on the trot, so we're quite experienced now. But, yeah, as I say, every baby's different. And, no, we're just enjoying it at the moment, so it's been good.
Ah, very good. Now, a very fancy title, General Manager Commercial Marketing and Communications. In your day-to-day role, what does that actually entail? Take us through your different responsibilities at FFE.
The role has overall responsibility for a range of key portfolios within FFV. Firstly, the focus is on sustainability of FFV through sponsorship acquisition, government funding, and those for the commercialisation of our assets, whether it's the events that we run or even our online digital platform. So I would then look to ensuring these partnerships or sponsorships are serviced according to the agreement requirements and the benefits that we mutually agree on. But also commercialisation also stems to programs that we run, such as the Melbourne Victory Westfield W League program. We run that on a sub-licence arrangement with Melbourne Victory Football Club. Equally, I think a key focus lies in the marketing of these events and programs to promote to our stakeholders, whether it be tournaments, leagues we run, or even education courses we might offer. And the biggest part of this would be to market the sport of football itself in competition to the other football codes, and I guess other sports, to increase football's participation, not only in the state, but also to assist our national governing body, the FFA, with their national objectives as well. The other side of that is maximising the profile and FFV brand, so ensuring that everyone knows who is involved in the game and who, you know, how the sport is governed, and the various pathways that we offer participants in the sport, whether it be for a player, a coach, a referee, and a volunteer. And I guess the only way you can do that is to oversee all the communication and our online digital platforms to ensure all our stakeholders can get the communication. And that's across our range of platforms, like the website, our major program sites, like our top-tier competition, both internal and external communications, like our monthly newsletters, and even then ensuring the media accreditation program that we have, and forming strong relationships with media outlets as well. So it's a big role, but obviously important to the future of our game.
Oh, it's a huge portfolio. One of the things I wanted to touch on, and just coming from a local club perspective for a minute, you said promote the or market the assets of the game, and many of the clubs, when they're thinking about, or grassroots clubs, when they're thinking about sponsorship, really see the assets that they have is being able to put a sign up here or there, put a logo in a newsletter and on a website. But there's so many more assets that a local club has got, and we'll look at that a little bit later. But from the FFV's point of view, what are the, take us through some of the assets that you're looking to, for want of better terminology, hang sponsorship off, and what sort of different sponsorship activations, I guess, is the formal word that you use with each of those assets?
Sure, I think the first thing is to look at the different commercial partnerships we actually have. And then, you know, because there's a range of, if you put your local club hat on as a committee member, what do you need to run the club? And it's the same thing with FFV. What do we need to deliver our services and I guess, confirm the sustainability of us to run these programs over a long period of time?
Sure.
So firstly, we all know that our clubs who play in our competitions, they're going to need balls to play with. We could then say to every club, well, they need to go and find their own balls, whether it's on eBay, whether it's over the internet, whether it's at your local market. But instead, we would take the approach to have a licensing program, so we can then make sure the quality of those balls are to our satisfaction and to our clubs as well, so they're using the right balls. So we might then say, well, you know, for this upcoming season, the following ball licensee also supplies other ones that we endorse. So we encourage all clubs to use those balls for their matches. And then that way there's some not governance, but the quality is upheld. So everyone's playing with the right quality.
Yep.
The other thing is around, trophies. You know, we might have a lot of the services is internal as well. We have to provide trophies and awards and to every basically player and clubs that participate. So it's important for us to keep costs low, but also maintain a good standard of product. And we can also pass those costs on to our customers or to our clubs and our players and et cetera. So there's a few things like that in terms of suppliers.
Yep.
But then there's also partnerships with sponsors who want branding. And want to use our volume and use our exposure for their benefit as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And how do you go about taking? Well, first of all, who are the major sponsors of FFV?
Well, we've got Jets Fitness, who are a 24/7 gym or fitness provider. They've come on board. And they actually had a twofold partnership, being front of shirt sponsor with the Melbourne Victory Westfield W League team as well. So they've seen the benefits of being involved in football and women's football as well in the off season, I guess, for the mainstream winter season. But then now they'll be involved in the winter season as well.
Okay.
The second sponsor is Banking on Football, yep. Who is equally a major sponsor. They've also become the back of shirt sponsor for the Melbourne Victory W League team. So again, for them, they see, you know, it's about how can they get involved with FFE. Then I would say, look, the biggest program that we have in terms of profile and exposure is possibly the Melbourne Victory W League team, which then has the ABC live matches. It's got a good following in the off season, and then during the winter season, they'd come on board and I guess leverage off the volume of participants we have during that season. So there are two major sponsors at the moment. We also have Vic Health, which is obviously important in terms of grants and investing in various programs that we have. And then the state government itself as well. So.
Well, they're four very, very different sponsors, and with four different, very, very different businesses. Apart from the branding and the promotional side of it, what other ways is FFE and the sport of football promoting those sponsors or taking the message of the sponsors through to its various audiences on the different platforms and assets that the league has and the FFE has?
Yeah, sure. I guess with the it's not just the website branding and ads and I guess email direct marketing to our database. I think that's important for them. But I think for someone like Jets Fitness, for example, it's about the messages that they promote to the community. A sponsor like Jets is a franchisee based, so there's different providers in each different Victorian or national zones.
Mm-hmm.
So they might want to say, well, we would like to develop partnerships with your various clubs. And then we would like to say, we would like to work with those local clubs to give back somehow to the community, because we want to obviously get people into the gym, and then how we can offer your participants or your club either a rebate type scenario, or, you know, whether we can come down to your training and cook the barbecue and all that sort of stuff. I guess they just want to give back to the community and show that they are doing that as well. And that's not just for Jets, but it's also for Banking or Football, for example, who won't just want advertising and to flood everyone with advertising and branding and all that sort of stuff, because we all know that the banking industry is quite convoluted. There's a lot of banks, especially in Victoria. We've got Melbourne Victory and Melbourne Heart, the two A-League clubs. They're partnered with banks as well. So for a bank like Banking or Football to come into Victoria, they're going to wonder how to do that. And what they've come up with is a program called Cash for Club, which offers clubs a rebate to promote the bank to their members as well. So everyone gets a slice of the pie and they get some cash rebates as well. So we would then work out, well, how's the best way we can get them to come into Victoria? Again, we've got our online branding, EDMs, all our newsletters, they can do that.
Yep.
But also, we can also get them to the event and meet face-to-face with the public in the community as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Just one last question for me, Anthony, before I hand over to Joe. The social side of sport is really powerful. How do you incorporate that into the sponsorship packages? Is there do you have much of a social component, or is it pure branding?
In terms of our social programs, is what you mean?
Or? No, I'm sorry. I mean by the terms of having events or president's luncheons or that sort of thing, where the sponsors can get together or they can bring their clients and interact in a social environment around the games themselves. Are you seeing that being used much in sponsorship?
Yeah,
packages?
I think that's the big one. I think corporate hospitality is a big one too. I guess having that opportunities for them to network is a key, because that's where most of the business comes from. It's about, the introductions that you give, especially all the suppliers that we have and our sponsors. They're very good at, utilising each other. If Banking on Football, for example, wanted a trophy or an award for their own employees, then they'd go and they've been already introduced to our trophy supplier, for example. And that's sort of how they build up their relationships, and they can refer to each other as well. So I think that's very important, especially when you, with the Melbourne Victory W League program, that's been very successful. especially with attracting individual player sponsors, because we can make them feel part of the family. They can come to corporate hospitality functions and network as well, and they all get talking and I guess speak about not only their involvement but football itself, and everyone's talking about being very positive about where this game's going.
Yeah, absolutely. And you said, as you said, being part of the family, and local clubs have the ability to do that, you know, just as much as the professional clubs do, don't they?
They do, and I think that's very important, because if those clubs are wanting sponsors mainly from local businesses, they're going to be either involved in the club. That local business is either going to be involved at the club already, might be a parent or someone. But if they're not, and they're the main street, the main street butcher or anything like that, they just want to be seen at those events, whether it's to give awards out to players in front of parents, whether they can have a 10-minute chat at an awards night or anything like that. I think that is all important, letting them, feel valued, and their investment has really made a difference.
Oh, absolutely. That's one of the really important messages, isn't it, that the value that we as local clubs have to sponsors is not just the branding, but just being able to have them involved in the club and introduce them and be part of the community is just as important to local sponsors.
Yeah, definitely.
Anthony, Joe here. There's a lot of clubs out there that are wondering how they should go about attracting sponsors, and you've touched on a few of the points there. But as an expert in the field, I wonder if you could just give them like a few little tips that they could use when they go out and try and attract sponsors to their local clubs.
Yeah, certainly. I think first one is don't be afraid to ask. You need to ask the question in order to kick off the proceedings, and go down and door knock but have the research already done, have all the statistics available on hand and know them back to front before you go and approach someone and ask them for money, because that's what you're doing. You're asking them to invest in your business, and you need to be knowledgeable with all the info, because on hand for them to know, because sometimes whether you're asking for $100, whether you're asking for $500, or whether you're asking for $5,000, the business needs to know what return of investment they're going to get on that, and that's the most important thing.
Mm. The other key thing for local clubs, from a local club perspective, is there's a lot of clubs that are successful going out there and getting sponsors for a year. They go out there and they go, please, mate, get on board. They go out to their local members, come on, be a sponsor. But it's not something that they can sustain over time. So I just wonder, have you got any tips that you can give the community out there for establishing an ongoing relationship with a sponsor of the club?
Sure. I think sustainability is the key. Given at club level, there may be a high turnover of committee members or volunteers that come in and out, and a lot of that sponsorship is because of internal contacts or, parents or friends or anything like that. I think you have to be ready to service those partnerships and not make them don't make things complicated. This is outline the benefits that they'll get for their investment and make sure that those benefits are delivered. I guess for me, I would always under promise and over deliver to ensure that sponsor keeps coming back for more.
Anthony, you said before that you would get all the information that you need before you go and talk to the sponsors about their club or the team. What information specifically? Because a lot of people talk to us because they're now the sponsorship manager, and they just don't know where to start. So when you started, take yourself back to when you first started in that role, what information did you collect and what did you actually do?
Well, firstly, I went back to, I had a blank canvas, I brainstormed, and for me it was about actually working out what assets we had available to commercialise and to benefit our sponsors, because we realise that we do have the volume. You know, we've got over 58,000 participants across the board, which is quite high in terms of volume, and a sponsor wanting to get their brand, exposed to those to that database, I guess. Then working out the different avenues we could do to promote their brand to our database. And then, for example, the Melbourne Victory W League team, they offered a quite unique experience because they have live matches on the ABC. So if that's the case, if you tell a sponsor we've got live matches on the ABC, they're going to ask you, how many viewers does that match get? How many spectators would you get to each match?
Yep.
So where can my sign be placed at the ground? Can it be behind the goals? Can it be on the halfway line? Can it be in front of the spectators? All those sort of things, you need to have that information. And that's what I did. And I went in there and just talked openly and honestly. And I think that's reflected on the sponsorships that we got for that program. And now I think they're in it for the long term because they've realised that there is so much to gain to be involved with football. And I think from a club perspective, is to also get statistics not only on your club but where football is now and where football is headed in general, not only in the state but nationally. And if your club has got more females, and if it's got more males, or if it's equal, or if it's something that you wanted really to promote, that's a feel-good thing for your club, then I'd say make sure that it's at the forefront, because there are some sponsors who are looking for being involved in those feel-good messages.
Anthony, we've talked a lot about things that we should do. Now, I just wonder if there's some expert advice that you could give the community out there about things that you shouldn't do when it comes to sponsorship. So, you know, maybe it's there's some commercialization that you might want to steer away from, or just give us your views on what we shouldn't do as a community club when we're chasing sponsorship dollars.
Sure. There are some very obvious ones that stand out for me, because I'd get at least one inquiry a month from a club wanting to do this. And that firstly is whether it's okay to get sponsorship from, an alcohol sponsor.
Right.
So, that is something that we've got a duty of care, or a club's got a duty of care to its participants, mainly if it's a junior club, to ensure that it's responsible, be responsible and ensuring whether being an under 13, under 13 team that has an alcohol brand on its jersey is the right thing to do and promote that.
Mm-hmm.
That's firstly. And the same thing possibly with gambling as well. And the other thing is ensuring that there's always an agreement or a written agreement between the club and that sponsor about the money that's exchanged hands, because there's a lot of sponsorships that I've seen that come from a parent. And also the motive behind the sponsorship is also, talking honestly, is whether the motive of gaining the sponsorship was wrong, because someone could have said, well, I'll offer you to pay for the team this year and my son or daughter needs to be in the team, or things like that. Mm-hmm. You need to be very wary of those real scenarios that occur, and mm-hmm. they're not really openly spoken about.
Mm-hmm. Mate, your feedback has been sensational, and I know Steve's nodding his head there, so he's concurring. We want to thank you for making yourself available to come on to the show. It's been great. I'm sure the community clubs out there will get a lot of valuable information from your expertise. So on behalf of the sports community, thanks very much for coming on to the radio, mate.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Okay, we've come to that time again when we need to close the show. Very big thank you to Anthony Grimmer, General Manager of Commercial Marketing and Communications at the Football Federation of Victoria. His expertise and feedback on issues around sponsorship has been enormous. We hope that you've got something out of that. We definitely have. And we also hope that you've got something out of our top 9 tips for running your annual general meeting. So, on behalf of me, Joe Novella,
and me, Steve Pallas,
we thank you.
We thank you for allowing us to be part of your sports community.
Until next week, bye for now.